You are listening to Ellie on an Island, Episode 2, Book Review, The Maid. Hi everyone, welcome to this episode. My name is Ellie. I'm an aspiring writer based in Montreal. It's currently snowing here, but we did have one day of above 0 degrees, which was awesome. Thank you very much for your support and encouragement for the first episode. I truly appreciate it. In this episode, we're going to talk about the book, The Maid. The ending will be revealed at the end. Think about a maid. The usual story I've read about a maid is the highly responsible person who's struggling to earn money, has someone to support, is a single mother, for instance, nevertheless doesn't give up on their dreams, and ultimately moves on to a different job. That progress and growth, that perseverance in the face of extreme hardship is one of my favorite things to see in a story. If you think about it, these elements are all present in Maid, the series currently on Netflix. This story is different in that the protagonist loves being a maid and takes deep pride in it. The Maid is a mystery novel written by Nita Prose and published by Viking, Penguin Random House, in January 2022. It's a new release, and that's the main reason it was chosen for this episode. I listened to the audiobook from Amazon. It's part of their Plus catalog, so you have to use your 1 monthly credit to purchase it. It's narrated by the actress Lauren Ambrose. Now, I'd like to point something out. It was announced even before the book hit the bookshelves that this book is currently being turned into a movie by Universal Studios. Congratulations to the author. At times, it's more like a screenplay turned into a book than the other way around. If you're familiar with the Iranian filmmaker Asghar Farhadi and his genre, this book is somewhat similar to his work. An important piece is cut out, and therein lies the answer to the mystery. His concern about the truth and the subjectivity of truth and justice is discussed here. Asghar Farhadi could have taken this book, worked his magic, and turned it into one of his own movies. The protagonist of The Maid is Molly. She works as a maid at an upscale hotel called Regency Grand Hotel. I love stories that are about everyday jobs around you. It's a lot easier to tell a story about a rock star or an athlete or a political figure because of the glam attached to these jobs, the popularity, and the fan base. It's harder when the protagonist has a normal job, as Molly puts it, omnipresent but also imperceptible. Molly is neurodivergent. It's not explicitly stated, but I think she's mildly autistic. She takes everything literally. She isn't able to interpret beyond what others say to her. She's also unsuspecting and takes everything at face value. I'm going to read from the book. Take a listen. The truth is, I often have trouble with social situations. It's as though everyone's playing an elaborate game with complex rules they all know, but I'm playing for the first time. I make etiquette mistakes with alarming regularity, offend when I mean to compliment. I misread body language. She's meticulous and fastidious when it comes to cleaning. I couldn't help but hear the author, not Molly, when reading the following descriptions in the book. Every day of work is a joy to me. I was born to do this job. I love cleaning. I love my maid's trolley and I love my uniform. There is nothing quite like a perfectly stocked maid's trolley early in the morning. It is, in my humble opinion, a cornucopia of bounty and beauty. The crisp little packages of delicately wrapped soap, that smell of orange blossoms, the tiny Crabtree and Evelyn shampoo bottles, the Scott tissue boxes, the toilet paper rolls wrapped in hygienic film, and bleached white towels in 3 sizes, bath, hand, and washcloth, and the stack of doilies for the tea and coffee service tray. So let's start from the beginning. Mr. Black is a real estate mogul, a wealthy person who frequents at the hotel. Molly goes to his room for cleaning in the morning. Giselle, Mr. Black's current and second wife, who's less than half his age, is crying on the divan and goes inside the bathroom and turns on the water when Molly enters. The fan of the bathroom is making a clunking sound. Molly cleans up everywhere except for the bathroom since Giselle's inside and says she'll return. Here you learn about the odd friendship between Molly and Giselle. In the afternoon, she goes back to finish up the bathroom. Like I said, she takes her job seriously. She's friends with Giselle, and she counts on her generous tips. But the room is quite a mess. Giselle isn't there anymore, but she feels someone is there. She finds Mr. Black lying dead on the bed. There are three pillows on the bed. The protocol is four pillows, too soft, too hard. She calls the front desk and says Mr. Black in room 401 is dead and all that. While she's waiting for them to come upstairs, which is strange, most people would run into the hallway, she sees a reflection in the mirror and notices someone, presumably the killer, is actually present in the room, a feeling she had earlier. This makes her faint. She has a history of a fainting spell. Under extreme duress, she faints. When she gains consciousness, no one from the front desk has yet arrived, which is odd. They don't take her too seriously, but this is out of sorts. Anyone calls the front desk, informing them of the death of a guest, I don't care who's calling and what their credibility is. They have to show up, right? Now here's the other strange thing. She fainted in the bedroom, but the story picks up from near the front door to the hallway. So she calls the front desk for the second time, asks to speak to her own supervisor, Mr. Snow, and tells him to call the police and come upstairs. I guess it's the thing when something important is cut out, similar to the girl on the train, when someone blacks out. It wasn't until the second time of listening that I saw precisely where the cut happened. This is key to the story. This all happens in chapter one. From now on, the story is dragged. The police start their investigation even before receiving the results of the autopsy, since Mr. Charles is considered VIP. High-profile people have already rallied on different sides. Molly and other people are interviewed. Molly bends the truth. She doesn't tell anyone she saw someone in the room. She doesn't say anything about seeing the safe inside the closet open, the two itineraries, the one passport, not two, the stocks of money sitting inside the safe in the morning but missing in the afternoon. She even denies knowing Giselle altogether. The moment the detective hears her say, "So I called downstairs," she interrupts her and asks her something else. It doesn't occur to her to wait and see what happens after her first call. Now listen to this. Molly fantasizes about hurting a colleague she doesn't like, strangling her with a bathrobe tie, pushing her off the balcony, spraying bleach in her face, to the point where she becomes the prime suspect to the reader. You start doubting whether she was telling the truth from the beginning, if she's as innocent as she appears to be. Now, keep all that in mind and hear about the other people involved in the story. Juan Manuel is the dishwasher whose work permit has expired, has lost all his money by giving it to a lawyer to help him with the permit, and doesn't have a place to sleep. Rodney, the bartender, asks Molly to help Juan Manuel by telling him which room is empty every night. The next morning, she cleans the room and makes it appear as if no one was there. As you can guess, this is a pretext. Unbeknownst to Molly, several people, including Mr. Black, are involved in drugs at the hotel. That's why they need the room. Molly is wiping away cocaine every day without knowing so. There is an important figure who's passed away but is present. Gran, Molly's grandmother, who raised her and lived with her until her death 9 months ago. This part is probably going to be flashbacks in the movie. Gran was also a maid. She was wise and greatly helped Molly understand things. Despite the financial challenges of Gran and Molly, they kept the place very clean and also purchased little home decor pieces from thrift stores. I personally found Gran a warm and kind person. Molly's previous and only boyfriend, Wilbur, was a thief. She was once going to deposit a paycheck to her joint bank account with Gran. Wilbur accompanies her. At the ATM, he starts distracting her by asking lots of questions and finds out her PIN number. A week later, Molly finds out that her bank card is missing and the account has been completely emptied. It was a large sum of money. If she were to continue working part-time, it was enough to cover the college tuition for hotel management and the rent for at least 2 years. She doesn't inform the police to prevent Gran from finding out. Gran has pancreas cancer at the time and isn't doing well. Now back to the murder. Giselle meets Molly at her apartment. Molly's never given her the address. She tells Molly she hid a gun above the bathroom fan and asks Molly to go and pick it up. It's what was causing the clunking noise. Molly doesn't tell the police about this. Giselle tells her Mr. Black's wedding ring is still there, and Molly pawns it to pay for her rent. She's played by Rodney. She thinks he's interested in her. But Rodney and Giselle are in a relationship. He gives her the address. The police ultimately arrest Molly for murder, drugs, and illegal gun possession. Here, people from the hotel come to her rescue. Gran had asked Mr. Preston, the doorman, to keep an eye out for Molly after her death. They knew each other. Mr. Preston's daughter, Charlotte, who's a lawyer, posts a bill for Molly and becomes her lawyer. Juan Manuel helps her catch Rodney red-handed to prove she didn't know about the drugs. Juan Manuel explains Rodney threatened his life and the life of his family and forced him to cooperate. He's the sole provider for his big family back home. Charlotte desperately tries to help Molly. She describes Molly as different. There's no shortage of criminals out there who'll prey on a person's difference for their personal gain. You've been played. You've been used as a pawn in Mr. Black's murder. But the detective is not aware of this about Molly. The book progresses very slowly. Had it been cut in half, it would have been more charming. Molly eventually learns she isn't to trust everyone and everything they say. That pushes her character to grow. Several months later, she has a trial, and for the first time, she mentions seeing another person in the room. When asked why she hasn't said it before, she states that she experiences things differently, and no one usually listens. She's found innocent. The murderer, though, is not identified. Then it jumps back to the part cut out in the beginning, after she faints. Remember the day of the murder? When she opens her eyes, she sees the killer and recognizes her, Mrs. Black, the first wife, not the second. She explains they had problems over the share of their daughter, Victoria. She killed Mr. Black with a pillow, the fourth pillow that was missing. Molly asks Mrs. Black what she's touched and actually cleans up and wipes down all the surfaces before calling the front desk for the second time. You're probably wondering why Molly had helped the killer and protected her. Molly had done the same with her grandmother. She sees Mrs. Black as a reflection of herself and doesn't divulge more details at court. Molly tells us she helped Gran with euthanasia by smothering her using a pillow. Molly, it's time, her Gran said. The narrator does an exceptional job here. Her emotions are reflected very well. She explains that mercy can take different forms. I personally didn't understand this part. Like, no one finds out, no one raises a question. And furthermore, this is said in recent times. Molly has a cell phone. How come the police doesn't check the cameras of the hotel? Now let's read this part of the ending. Gran always said the truth is subjective, which is something I failed to comprehend. My truth is not the same as yours, because we don't experience life in the same way. We're all the same in different ways. This more flexible notion of truth is something I can live with, or what I choose not to examine too closely. Justice, like the truth, is subjective. So many of those who deserve to be punished never receive their just deserves, yet good people, decent people, are charged with the wrong crimes. It's a flawed system, Justice. A dirty, messy, imperfect system. But if the good people accept personal responsibility for exacting justice, will we not have a better chance of cleaning the entire world, of holding the liars, the cheaters, the users, and the abusers to account? I do not share my views on this subject widely. After all, I'm just a maid. And as a happy ending, Juan Manuel and her enter a relationship. He moves in with her. Charlotte and Mr. Preston become friends with them and come over once a week on Sundays. Giselle also makes an anonymous wire transfer of $10,000 as a debt of gratitude. Molly plans on starting the hotel management and hospitality program at the nearby college. So that was today's podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. Please subscribe, like, and let me know how you felt about the book. I will talk to you in my next episode. Bye!